Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. We're lucky. Joining us this week is Blair Horner, Legislative Director for the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. Blair Horner is certainly the single most insightful person about what goes on in Albany that there is. Welcome, Blair.
Thanks for having me.
Blair, I guess I want to talk to you first about a new plan, which is called Can the Plan. What's that?
Right. Well, as many of your listeners have heard over the years, you know, every 10 years, New York State adjusts its political boundaries to reflect changes in the state's population. It's called redistricting. And this November, voters go to the polls to approve or disapprove an amendment to the change the state's redistricting process. The report that we put out yesterday identified how bad the 2012 deal was that the governor cut with the legislature, and also to lay out our criticisms for the amendment. We actually don't believe that the amendment will do any good, and so we're urging people to can the plan, hence the title.
Can the plan.
Can the plan.
Now, the plan, as you suggest, is a Yiddish word somewhat for schlugene. And the
chutzpah, when you think about
it. Chutzpah also, yeah. And so what's wrong with the plan?
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of things, but the main criticism that currently exists for redistricting in New York is lawmakers draw their own lines, choose their own voters. That's the basic criticism.
This in a so-called democracy.
This in a democracy, a so-called process. And so,
in other words, we're going to fix the game. Let you draw. Whatever, if you're in the majority party, you get to draw whatever district you want. Even though, let's say, we have a blue state, New York. It's been very hard to get a blue state senate because they're drawing their own districts in which they can't, the Republicans in which they can't lose.
I think you're all set on this one, Alan. You don't even have to ask me any questions. Let me ask you the questions.
Sure. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
So what's wrong with redistricting in New York?
Well, I just told you the game is fixed, and we all know that the game is fixed. Now, why did Andrew Cuomo go along with this amendment, which is so ridiculous?
Well, let me just sort of wind back one quick step. You asked the question of me about what's wrong. And I said, well, the current system is lawmakers draw their own lines. And technically, the way they do it is they created their own commission currently, which lawmakers sit on and their staff. That's the commission. They have hearings. They draw the lines. The legislature approves. The amendment says, well, we're going to change that process so that the legislature will pick its own commission, but they won't sit on it.
That's a riot.
That's the reform. Words,
so now the reform is that they get to pick
their staff.
For want of a better word, butt kissers, who will do exactly.
Is that another Yiddish term? I've never heard that.
Well, actually, I could give you the Yiddish term or the Spanish term. They can pick the people. Big reform.
And it gets better. This commission then makes the lines. The legislature has to approve it. If they vote it down, this commission appointed by the legislature gets to do it again. If the legislature votes it down a second time, the legislature draws their own lines. So even if by some miracle the people that they pick come up with something that they don't like, they get to do it anyway.
Well, now, wait a second. I have written in this week's column that I put out in a couple of newspapers that Andrew Cuomo is a strategic genius.
He has political sonar. He can see over the horizon.
And when he ran the first time, he said that he would not let them draw their own districts again with
That's
the redistricting
correct.
Bill. But he went ahead and he did it.
Right.
There are a lot of people, including me, that have always believed that the reason the Republicans sit in the New York State Senate right now is that he wanted them there like his father had them there so that they would be the bad guys and he could say, no, I would do it to his left-wing constituents, but they're telling me I can't do it. And so he wanted the Republicans in place. This whole thing got them there. So how does he rationalize that?
Well, I mean, now you're asking me to get into the mind of Andrew Cuomo, which
is a dangerous place.
Well, my guess is, like the public financing proposal that he put in the budget, which we condemned, that this is really about the optics of reform, not really the substance of
reform. He's playing with us.
And, well, I think he thinks he's doing the best he can. This would probably be his argument. He's doing the best he can. And that's the best deal he can cut, and therefore that's what you get.
You don't believe that, do you? This is
no.
a guy who he could slap them up the side of their heads. They say jump up and down. Whatever he says to them, they got to do it because he's Andrew Cuomo, and he'll kill them otherwise.
I would agree that the governor could do more. What I think, though, is that this is not a high priority for the governor, that the priorities for the governor are on-time budgets, same-sex marriage, gun control, I mean, other issues that he believes resonates with the public. And I think he believes that the public doesn't care enough about reform that he's going to care enough about.
Now, Blair Horner, did he trade their ability to draw their own districts, basically, for getting some of those other substantive issues you said? So I'll give you this, and we know that the only thing you really care about is staying in office. And so I'll give you this if you give me these substantive issues,
Coincidentally or not, roughly at the same time, marriage equality did pass that same session. Some argued that the Senate Republicans' agreement to allow that to come to a vote was tied to their deal on redistricting. I mean, who knows, though, right? I mean, it's Albany, right?
I know.
Well, thank God you're here. But, you know, everything happens behind closed doors. Nobody ever tells you what's really going on. So all we're left is with, other than the oracle of WAMC, the rest mere mortals of us are left with just trying to figure things out.
You know, mortality must be a tremendous burden. Okay, so you come out with this plan.
Right.
Can the plan. Now, explain why New Yorkers are going to vote on this deal.
Well, the way that you change the redistricting process is you have to change the state constitution. The way that works is you have to have two successive legislatures approve it, the amendment, and then it goes to the voters for ultimate approval. And so they passed it twice. It goes to the voters this November. We'll have to go through some sort of dance with the State Board of Elections next month. Well, they'll draft the language for what the question is. And as you may recall, last year, during the casino amendment, the governor reached in and put his thumb on the scale.
It was disgraceful.
It was bad. It was very bad. And I have to admit, I'm a little nervous about what the language is going to say this time about the redistricting amendment. But unlike last year, when no one really was paying attention to the casino amendment, and as you may recall, there was some litigation on that, but they filed it too late. I think this time we'll be watching them like a hawk. And, you know, are people going to be doing what we can to make sure that process is as fair as possible? And then we'll duke it out on Election Day.
Well, is there any sense for polling or anything else if the public's even thinking about this? And if they are, what their predilections might be?
No and no. I don't think anybody's thinking about it. The reason we put the report out the first working day after the legislative session ended was to build up a head of steam to make the public discussion. I mean, like in anything else in politics, the voters will sort of tune into this sometime after Labor Day, probably after the primaries. And so we need to have sort of a running head start because we don't have any money. This will be tied to a very popular governor, is certainly popular right now.
Yep.
And he'll be going into the November general election, and I assume he'll be telling people to vote for it.
And he will say, I reformed the system so that they can't draw their own districts themselves, only their first cousin can.
That's right. Only their puppets can draw the lines. They won't draw them directly. That's exactly right.
Well, I hate to beat the dead horse, but you know, it just seems so awful that we would allow legislators. Are you listening out there, folks? That we would allow legislators to draw their own districts where only they could win. Wrong.
It really is amazing. It really is amazing. When the report goes into some detail about the way the district lines are drawn, and one of the things that we found is that there is a huge disparity in population sizes of the Senate districts, for example.
Didn't the Supreme Court speak on one man, one vote?
Yes.
One person, one vote?
One person, one vote is the rule. For Congress, you can't. The populations of the congressional districts have to be virtually the same. In New York, the difference between the largest and smallest is one person. However, they give the U.S. Supreme Court has given states a lot of latitude on what the range, allowable range is for population deviations because of state constitutional restrictions.
Yes.
And so in New York, they didn't get rid of, when they did this amendment, doesn't get rid of all of the unconstitutional provisions that are still in the Constitution. And they just sort of graft on top of it this sort of puppet commission. And so what we saw in last district lines was 27,000 people population difference from the smallest Senate district population to the largest Senate district population, and the Assembly 10,000 because the district is smaller. And essentially, you really get to see how it works. Since the Republicans drew the line for the Senate, the upstate Senate districts have the smallest population. That way you can have more districts. The Assembly Democrats, who drew the lines for the Assembly, the districts...
Wait a second. The Republicans basically have always traditionally controlled upstate
New
York.
Right.
So therefore, they want more districts up there where they can get more votes.
That's right. So they basically essentially moved one Senate district into upstate. So that helps them, particularly in a close competitive state Senate. The Assembly Democrats, who drew the same state, same voters, magically came up with Assembly districts that have the smallest populations in New York City.
So they have more people.
You can therefore have more assembly districts that happen to be Democratic. So same state, same population, same voters, two diametrically opposed ways of drawing the lines. And that's because the state constitution and law allows them to game the system. So you have idiotic rules, people that are in charge of it that are operating in their own self-interest. And we identified, just because we'd like to have fun, the Salvador Dali Pablo Picasso Award for the most artistically drawn districts in New York.
I want to go there. I love that. I love that.
It's hard to do it on the radio, but
I want to know. You don't
melted
have to
clock.
You don't have to show us, but you can describe it. Mm-hmm. In our nomenclature, we want these districts to be compact and contiguous.
That's what the state constitution
says. Yeah, compact and contiguous.
Yes.
That means we want them next to each other. You take a look at those western states like Wyoming and Montana. They're all squares. They're sort of right next to each other. But we don't have anything like that here. We let them do whatever the heck they want.
Mm, that's right. That's right. And so you come up with sort of some hilarious-looking maps. And by the way, for the listeners who want to actually take a look at these things, you go to NYPIRG.org, and it's right on our homepage.
NYPIRG.
Right. NYPIRG.org.
Yep.
So some of the favorites for mine were Senator Zeldin's district on Long Island, Senate District 3, looks to me... It was tough, but it looked to me like a crocodile, and that was the vote. It has the gnashing teeth, the whole thing. Although some people argue it looked like a dog, so only on a map would somebody not be sure if it looked like a crocodile or a dog. But they has the big teeth. It has the snout. It really does. And Alan, I'm going to go to the page of this report.
Personally, frankly, while you're doing that, yes. I could say I would rather have a dog than a crocodile myself.
Well, that's absolutely true. Here it is. You get to vote right over here.
See, right there, I'm seeing it. Yeah, it looks very, very strange. The green is what we're talking about.
Yes.
And the green, for those of you who are listening on the radio, through the magic of radio, it does look like a dog crocodile.
A crocodile. A dogadile. So that was one of my favorites. Another was the Claudia Tenney's district, which is, we called it the leftover lightning bolt. Her district starts in the Utica area and goes all the way down to Middletown, and it zigzags all the way through. Yeah,
And goes through several counties, right?
Like seven or eight.
Seven or eight counties.
Yes.
That's compact and contiguous.
Yes, right. Yes, exactly.
Look at it. It looks like, for those who are, or just
or
trust me on this, it looks like sort of a snakish sort of boa constrictor.
And what was reported at the time was that they, you know, when map makers, they had like districts that were left over, the Assembly Democrats.
Yeah.
Republican areas, they didn't know what to do. So it was like the leftover district, and that's why it looks so strange. It sort of snakes its way down. It takes her 3.5 hours to drive from her home, which is the northern part of the district, to the southern part of the district, for an assembly district, not a congressional district.
Now, the strategies, talk to us about the strategies for a minute. One of the strategies in creating these districts are you want to give the other guys no advantage at all. So let's say you're a Democrat and you got a whole bunch of Republicans all over the place. The idea is throw all the Republicans in one district
so
they can't infect the other districts, right?
That's right. And we have actually a pretty good map of that. I'll show it to you. There's a district on Long Island. We called it the Lobster Claw, which runs along the north shore of Nassau County and then very narrowly comes down the Suffolk County border and goes into the center of Nassau County. It's like a claw, big C, backward C. Why does it look like that? Well, it cobbles together North Shore Democrats on Long Island with minority Democrats in the center of the island, and it's carved out so a Democrat can win. It has about 60% Democratic enrollment advantage, 60% of the voters are Democrats, in a county that's basically 50-50. Now, inside the claw is an assembly Republican district with 80-plus percent of its enrolled voters being Republicans. And so what mapmakers were trying to do is carve out as many assembly Democratic districts in the suburbs as they could and give them enough voters so that they could actually win. By the way, this district is seated by Assembly Democrat Charles Levine, and he, prior to him was David Sitikman. So it's been an Assembly seat for a long time, Assembly Democratic seat for a long time. So that's the strategy. You pack as many of your minority party voters into as few districts as possible, and then you, if necessary, crack your opponent's districts. And what you see this a lot is on the Senate Republican side, where they break up urban areas in upstate New York,
right,
so that there's a few, they sprinkle around the Democratic voters into as many Senate Republican districts as possible. And you see that on Long Island, too, in fact.
Actually, you see it in Bronx and Westchester a little bit.
That's right.
In which the idea is, okay, who comes out to vote? Well, more people in Westchester, the higher the income, the more likely you are to vote. So you could take a lot of people from the Bronx who aren't going to vote and take a few from the Westchester who are going to vote and figure out how to win an election that way.
That's right. And by the way, that area happens to have the winner of the Salvador Dali Pablo Picasso Award for the most artistically drawn district. And that's Senator Klein's district.
Oh, which, Senator Klein.
Which looks like a bug hitting the after it has hit the windshield of your car. We called it the Bronx Bug on the Windshield. And
Award.
This is anything but compact and contiguous. I mean, this is like an amazing district that looks like some sort of psychological exam.
And we have to remember, Blair Horner, who Jeff Klein is.
He was involved in drawing the line.
Yes, he was. And he's the leader of what we sometimes call the traitors, or the guys who came over to the Republicans and said, we'll keep you in power, maybe with Andrew Cuomo's help, maybe not, I suspect so.
Well, the twist in this is the governor was involved in helping these lines, to approve these lines to be drawn for the 2012 elections. Republicans were still not able to keep control of the state Senate, and that's where Jeff Klein and his band of allies
The Republicans lost.
Came in.
There were more Democrats.
That's right.
Four of them now. Five of them go over across the line. They get choice committee assignments. Yeah, they get choice committee assignments. They get other things, and that's why we have what we have right now. Now, the governor, by the way, just on that issue, has now said, as a result of his close call in the convention for the Working Families Party, because it looked like somebody named Zephyr Teachout was going to beat him there, he had to say, and did say, that he was going to help the Democrats get back into power. Some people think that that was a lot of nonsense because he was the one who put them there in the first place. So what do you think about that?
Well, it'd be interesting to see exactly. I mean, I don't know if they ever got anything in writing on this, because technically the Democrats control the Senate now. It's just because the Independent Democratic Conference split off and went with the Republicans.
But even for this governor, that would be too cute, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, it's not up to him, he would say, right? I mean, it's up to the lawmakers to sort of figure out
that.
So I don't know technically how this is all going to work. My guess is that the election this November will be more or less a wash in terms of partisan advantage and disadvantage in the Senate, and that the Independent Democratic Conference, however they organize themselves, will be the swing as to who ultimately controls. And we'll see if your theory is right, that the governor can make this particular group either toe the line or not.
New York second, he could. But besides that, I mean, everybody's afraid of Andrew. He's tough. So
that's how politics gets played.
Yeah, well, he could do that. Well, that's a good way to say it. Mussolini was tough, and, you know, he got things done.
That's
also
the way politics were played in Italy.
Yeah,
in
right.
Well,
it was
the 20s and 30s.
Until they hung him upside down. So I guess the question I want to know is this. I saw a piece somewhere, I forget where I saw it, said that Klein and the Independent Democrats, who are now really Republicans, were negotiating for a power sharing with the regular Democrats, which would put the regular Democrats and Klein back in control. What do you hear about that?
I've read the same articles in the paper. It's been denied by Klein.
Yeah.
If I was a Senate Democrat who was looking to sort of cause trouble, I would probably start that rumor myself. My guess is that everyone's going to keep their weapons down on this. There probably won't be much in the way of serious negotiations. So you see what happens in November. If the Republicans run the table and they have 32 seats, no one's going to care. If the Democrats maintain, you know, some sort of majority, it could be a big difference.
I only have 5 minutes, so this is a real lightning round. One, Zephyr Teachout.
It's a great name.
Who, the best name in organized politics. On this show, sitting where you sit, says she wants to run against the governor in a Democratic primary. She also says that the governor's people will try to disqualify her because she won't have the right names and the right middle initials, whatever they have to do.
Right.
Will she get on the ballot?
Well, that's I don't know the answer.
Well, you're the expert, so you.
it depends on the. Well, they're going to need some multiple of the 15,000 signatures they need, right? So it's going to be either 30,000, 40,000 signatures. Yeah. I have no idea if they have a ground operation. My guess is that if they have sort of the institutional wherewithal to handle a canvas, a statewide canvas, that they should be able to get the signatures.
Okay. And number two, there is a question as to whether Bill Samuels, who is the son of Howie the Horse Samuels, who ran for governor himself, whether Bill Samuels is going to run for lieutenant governor against Kathy Hochul, who is the governor's handpicked person for the Democrat, because in New York State, mm-hmm. you run separate primaries. So will Bill Samuels run?
No, this guy Wu is going to run.
Wu, a law professor who's
another law professor.
A friend of Teachout's.
And he's the guy who set up the whole net neutrality issue. So he's very well known nationally. He's actually, I think the lieutenant governor's primary, if he actually gets on the ballot, that's where the action is going to be.
Now
because if there's a big Asian turnout in New York City, for example, Lou is primarying Avella, it's possible that Hochul could get beat. She's an upstate pro-NRA, she's had some issues with immigration, bank lobbyist. In a Democratic primary, you would think that Mr. Net Neutrality, if he had a campaign and resources, would have a reasonable shot. That's where the action is going to be in this. And the ironic thing
is... Well, you don't think Teachout will beat Andrew Cuomo?
I think it's unlikely. And the wild card in all that would be is if Wu did win... then Hochul is on the line for working families and independence parties, and then the governor would not be able to aggregate his totals because it would not be the same ticket unless they figured out a way to move Hochul off. So it's really sort of the wild card in the whole Democratic primary is if he gets on, which, again, there's no guarantee, that I think the potential for mayhem is great.
We only have 3 minutes left, so I wanted to ask you this very quickly. See how fast I'm going?
And I'm not.
And that is ethics reform, something you've been very interested in.
Yeah, That's the Yiddish response on ethics.
Yeah, something you've been very interested in. They keep coming up with these ethics packages. Once you unravel them, there's a stink emanating from the middle of them. Do you think we'll ever see bona fide ethics reform in New York?
Depends what U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara comes up with.
After Cuomo said no more Moreland Act Commission and just let it go, Preet Bharara got all of the documents and everything that they were working on. We haven't heard squat yet about any of this.
And you wouldn't expect to, right? I mean, he's a U.S. He's a U.S. attorney. He's not going to tell anybody, but he's a big game hunter. And I don't think he would be looking in this particular area if he didn't think that there was a possibility to do something. So depending what they may come up with nothing, right? But if there are some big game gets hunted by Preet Bharara, I think that's going to change the dynamic on ethics reform dramatically.
Look, these guys are absolutely predictable, the whole mess of them. And when they start talking about, okay, maybe we should have ethics reform and you don't really get it, you get something but you don't get it, or we should have something else. For example, we'll have campaign finance and they put it on poor, Tom DiNapoli, it was just disgusting. And he says, no, thank you, let's all do it together, and whatever he said. And so have they no shame?
Well, shame, I don't think is in the lexicon. Next question.
Okay. Well, Blair Horner, I have to just say that we love having you with us. You are a very bright man, and you have a great sense of humor, and you are somebody who we all respect so much. So thank you for being here, and we hope that you'll come back the next time. We'll talk about exciting things like, is he Sheldon Silver or is he Sheldon E. Silver? And we'll talk about where all of your predictions have gone or not gone. We are out of time. Our guest has been Blair Horner, legislative director from NYPIRG, NYPIRG.org. Blair, thanks so much for joining us.
It was great being on the show, and everybody should make a contribution to WAMC.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.